Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 267, the We Are Just Recording edition, which is nice. It's more laid back. Let's put it that way. Joining me this week, as he always does, he's having a brewski or two, I think, this evening. It's John.
Hey, hey, everybody. Yep, you are right. It's a consolation prize for going to the store to buy a carton of milk and some other stuff and coming home without said milk. And then I went back and got the milk and bought some beer. So, happy Thursday.
Anything fancy? Yeah, I was going to say, are you working tomorrow?
Yeah, but I'm not going to be drinking a lot of beer, just a couple. Some sippers. Some wobbly pops.
Like, do you... Oh, wow, going full Canadian on us. Do you ever have the issue of drinking them too slowly to where the point they get like almost too warm for the type of beer?
Yeah, sometimes. Well, it all depends. Like right now, I have a couple sitting here on my desk just so I don't have to step away and go pick them out.
Right.
But I'm a what's the word? Efficient drinker, so I don't really dawdle too long.
It took me a long time to learn to sip beer, just because for so many years, the point of drinking was to get drunk, you know? And so it's like, how fast can you achieve that? Or at least how fast can you achieve that functional line, you know, like where one or two more and it's all over, but the shouting and you try to stay somewhere in between that and I'm comfortably numb kind of deal. So the more social at home drinking, which I don't do a lot of, not that there's anything wrong with it, it's always been a little bit more of a challenge to me.
Yeah. Well, if I drink at home, it's usually just cause it's a hot evening or something like that, just to have a cold one and relax and, you know.
Yeah, the other thing I have to be careful of, and I guess it's just I'm getting older and I've always had some allergy and head issues. I usually have to have like a minimum of two. For some reason, one just leaves me feeling kind of bleh, and with a lot of beers, I'll get a headache. I got to at least get a little buzzed, and then it's usually okay. And if the ugh headache thing happens, it's after I'm gone to bed anyway, so who cares? Also joining us this week, he's probably, to keep the weather pod thing going and annoying the audience, he's probably in the hottest region of the three of us this week because it's cooled off here in California. It's Glacinator.
Hey, it was actually that bad this week. It's been raining the whole week, so it's humid, but it's not deathly hot.
I think fall's getting here.
Yes, it better be. It's September.
See, John doesn't want it to. You want it to, and I'm okay with the temperatures we have right now. It's not too horrible, so I can deal with this at the moment. So, Glacinator kind of knows this, but we were talking, or Glacinator knows what I did, but we were talking last week about, you know, the entry level for PC gaming, and I vented a lot of stuff about PC gaming, and I think John helped me very well with that. But after the show, that show really hammered the shit out of my computer for some reason. I'm like, oh God, what's going on now? And it's almost 5 years old. I mean, it's getting time. You know, it's getting time toward the spiral to death scenario. If you use one as much as I do, John's has probably got more time in it than mine does at this point, just due to use. But about a year ago, I was led to believe that this box would only hold 8 gigs of RAM total. And because whatever was annoying me cleared up soon after, I decided to just leave it at that. It's like, all right, fine. I tinkered with some other stuff, changed out some other parts, and left it alone. But about last week after the show, when my computer was basically being a big bitch, and I had to reboot it just to even get the show edited, I'm like, all right, I know what part of this issue is. And so I started doing research again. Well, good news, John. Our motherboards will, in fact, hold 16 gigs of RAM. So I ordered some RAM Monday morning, Amazon and its Prime service got it to here to me on Wednesday. Actually, pretty early in the day, given it was this stupid service UPS has where it's like UPS part of the way and then postal service the rest of the way. Fucking cheap bastards. I shouldn't say Amazon is cheap bastards, because this was a third party vendor that qualified for Amazon's Prime service. So I don't think it was really Amazon's choice how it got shipped. But anyways, I got it here. And I went to go install it. And this is the part where I understand why John doesn't like the tinkering. And it's why I'm telling this long and involved and it's rambling even more than I want story. I did not notice how the CPU fan was built, and I went to go put the first stick in next to the CPU fan, and it didn't feel right. And so when I went to go pull it back, one of the ears on the RAM slot had a bit of an issue. Now, it's not broken, and luckily I've been dealing with PCs long enough that I can make it work later on. But one of the byproducts of computers going forward is a lot of RAM memory now has what's known as heat spreaders. If you've ever seen a picture of a RAM stick these days, it's not just a green stick. It's always usually got the company's logo and it's anodized. It's ridiculous is what it is. That heat shield was hitting on the CPU fan, and so it wouldn't go in. The dislocated a keeper on the RAM slot already had me pissed off. And so I took my time and I replaced the other three sticks, which is the other reason I'm sharing the story. No matter what with PCs, sometimes you just have to take a big deep breath and take a pause, look at it again, and then go with it and work with it some more. Obviously, that applies to a lot of thing in life, a lot of things in life, but with PC, sometimes people just think if one thing goes wrong, the whole thing's gone horribly, horribly wrong. And that wasn't the case. So to speed up this story, I essentially got 12 gigs of RAM installed into the PC. And I went, you know, I bet there's something I can do to that last stick to modify it, to put it in the slot without hitting the CPU cooler. And so I went, I'm going to look into that. But meanwhile, I'm going to fire up the PC again to make sure that it all runs correctly before I void the warranty on the fourth stick with the Dremel tool. And so that right there is a classic example of why at times PC gaming needs to be a little more self-contained, like consoles. Because if you wanted to install more RAM, John, I could easily walk you through that on Skype, and I know you're more than capable of doing it. But if something happens like what happened to me, then you're stuck, because I could advise you still, but it becomes this case of, without being there, I really can't give you 100% solid advice. And so that's kind of where it just got me all to thinking again about PC, you know, PC gaming, and how can we make it more accessible to people without it just completely becoming a console that you can't do anything with. But one of the other reasons I did it, and the reason I'm still babbling about it to the audience, is what that is going to do for me now. It's not going to make my computer all that much better. It's increased its performance some. Probably increase it a little more if I get that last stick in. It's just taking load off of the CPU and the graphics card so that I can extend the life of this machine maybe another year or two. And that, to me, is something that a lot of people overlook, even when they're knowledgeable about PC gaming, that you or PCs in general, that if you start to study, and it doesn't take much, you know, what makes a PC run, sometimes you can extend the life of them and still do everything you want to do with them. You know, for me, this upgrade wasn't as much about gaming as it was keeping this box healthy so that we can do more podcasts, so I can do more silly videos, so I can play games. You know, and that's another aspect that I wish gamer PC gamers and PC the PC industry was a little better at explaining, even if it does cost them a few bucks. Mm-hmm. You know, my goal with this box is essentially I want to keep it alive so that when I do save my pesos and get another one, I can use this at least for a while as a render machine. So that's kind of my other reason for upgrading. As to the heat shielding, I will be taking it off of that sticker ram so it looks like, or heat spread or whatever the fuck G-Skill calls it. There are plenty of tutorials out there that show you how to take it off, and after 2 days of reading, I've come to the conclusion that that heat spreader does absolutely nothing unless it's some of the new DDR4 RAM. It just makes the 15-year-old kids go ooh and ah when they're putting it in their machine, and it looks better than Billy Across the Street's machine. Mm-hmm. So my heat gun and my a couple very fine tools I have will be probably going at that one piece of RAM this weekend. Mm-hmm. I may wait till Monday. But that machine, that motherboard you've got, John, is actually a lot more expandable than I thought. You could legitimately, if you wanted to, put more RAM on it, and you could even upgrade it to an older i7 processor. It's like one of the first generation i7s, still fast as hell. Mm-hmm. And those are still out there. Like, retail's still out there. I'm not putting any more money in this box than I have. It's as good as it's going to get, but I was pleasantly surprised. And it seems to help it some. But quite honestly, other than day job work and a little bit of worm, and yes, I mean a little bit, I haven't had a ton of time, that's really... Upgrading my PC, getting my office fall cleaned, and doing other things as we head into fall is really what my whole week has entailed. Mm-hmm. Have you, Glace, have you ever worked on the inside of a desktop? Like your brother's when he funged his?
Nope. That is something that does not interest me at all. Just never has interested me. I don't think it ever will interest me.
Any specific reason why? I'm always curious about this.
I don't know. Like, I like Legos, but I don't like... And I like building IKEA furniture, but for some reason, I don't like building tech stuff.
Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that you're working in a very confined space?
No, I just don't like all the little parts. But, like, at the same time, like I said, I like Legos and things like that. So, I can't really say exactly why I don't like it.
I just was curious because a lot of people I talk to don't like the fact that if the machine is already built and you're upgrading it, you're working in a very tight space. You know, like I had to take my power supply apart or, you know, unplug a bunch of stuff and take my video card out to even be able to access the RAM area. Now, that's because I've added a different power supply and video card. I don't think it was that way initially with Gateway, but... but I'm just always curious about, but you're not, you think you could do it. You're not afraid of the concept.
No. If I had to do it, I could do it.
Yeah.
It's not like a very visual thing for me. So I just kind of zone out / don't really enjoy that type of work.
No, that makes sense. Have you ever had to, John? I know you've said you don't like tinkering, but I don't think I've asked you this question either.
Have I ever upgraded a computer?
Just messed with the inside of one, period.
Yes, actually, back in, this was in the day when my mom kind of handed me down her computer to take with me for university. I did add some RAM to it on my own, imagine that, and I mean, it was rather painless putting it into the slot and booting it up, and, you know, I think my buddy might have helped me with something with it, to be honest, but it wasn't much. Installing a network card so we could play Star Wars Pod Racer in the house, but...
Overland,
yeah.
Yeah, like Glace said, you're talking about playing, you know, Nintendo games on the couch. I miss LAN parties sometimes. I miss just even with roommates, you know, that I had when I was younger. I miss that sometime. There's just something about that that's different than even when you're playing with like people you really like on the internet, like you guys. I always love playing with you guys. All the Wonder Plays we did, had a blast doing them. You know, when I play with the guys in Worm or when I'm playing with Agent K and something, I always have a blast, but it still doesn't quite replicate that LAN party feel. Yeah, memory's a pretty easy one. In fact, I'm still not 100% sure why the little keepers I'm talking about, John, that click in place when you push the RAM down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not 100% sure why that one kind of popped one side of it off. I mean, the RAM will still sit in there. I did test it with one of the old sticks.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure I can fake it. When all else fails, kids, fake it. The biggest thing with PCs, honestly, is getting the CPU on right. Everything else is either just plug it, like Glace said. I actually think your Lego example was probably the most. But there is a lot to it that just could make you go, eh. Like I don't like building them from scratch anymore. I'll buy one, then work on it to my taste and, you know, financial abilities, like I've done with this Gateway.
I mean, there was one point where I considered the building of a PC and getting my friend's help to do so and buying the components and learning how to do that crap, but I just didn't. I ended up buying a laptop.
Yeah, like I said, the hardest part... Well, the nice thing about the internet now, though, is versus, like, the first one I ever built... And this doesn't make me special, so don't even start thinking that. It is, like, when I screwed up that RAM stick, I came in here and looked up on my laptop to see what my options were.
Mm-hmm.
As far as what could I do with the stick of RAM, what could I do with that little slot thing. And, of course, I have other skills in shop work, let's just call it. So I'm sometimes more willing to try stuff that I know won't hurt the components that other people might not have access to the tools or equipment to do, you know? And so, not that a Dremel tool's that expensive or some of the other stuff, but like I said, it's been an interesting experience, but I thought I'd also come on the show and go, yep, I fucked up. Cause I did. I was not a happy camper with myself. I put myself in timeout for a couple hours after I got it all done. Even 12 gigs of versus 8, it's noticeable, but it's definitely going to do what I want to. Okay, so I know what John wants to talk about this week. Glace, what have you got on your mind this week? Shall John go first and we'll get back to you, or?
Oh, I can go first. It's okay.
Okay, well, do that.
This is it's kind of random, but this past week I've been playing Titanfall on Xbox One. And I have no idea why I started playing it. I kind of went downstairs and I was watching TV and I was looking through all the Xbox One games that I haven't touched yet because they're all my brother's, but he hasn't been downstairs in a while because he's on his fancy computer. So I'm like, oh, I'll try these out. Oh, let me try Titanfall because I remember watching him play it and I thought it was kind of interesting looking. So I figured I'd pop it in. And I played maybe 2-3 hours worth of it this past week. I think I'm level like 15 by now. You level up really fast. You level up usually about one level a game. So it can go pretty fast. I think the highest you get is 50, but I'm sure it gets exponentially harder as you go up. So I mean, I like it. I'm not sure there's anything new to say since it's come out. I'm not sure if we ever talked about it on here besides the fact that none of us got it. And Pat was looking for us to get it. I mean, I like the running around aspect of it, the parkour aspect of it. I mean, what I tend to do is, like, what I do in Battlefield is I get a shotgun class with someone who has, like, a lot of speed, you know, and can dodge radars and stuff like that and go behind the enemy lines and then end up coming backwards through the enemy lines and shooting everyone from behind. That's usually my normal strategy with most shooting games. And so this, I mean, it actually makes sense because, you know, you can jump over things and actually have interesting routes to, you know, flanking a team, basically. So, I mean, it's really satisfying to find a cool pathway, jump over some blocks, you know, or some cartons or whatever, some rocks, and then come around a building and shoot everyone up. The Titan fighting of it stuff is kind of cool, I guess. It can get kind of like whoever hits first wins sort of thing. There's a special ability where you can like reflect people's bullets back at them, so it just becomes a game of chicken, where it's like who's going to shoot first, because whoever shoots first is going to end up getting shot back with the reflect ability, and then it'll just keep going back and forth with this reflect ability until someone runs out. But I mean, just in terms of maneuverability, I think that's the best part of the game, is just being able to get around the map easily, and it makes it look fluid. I haven't really had any issues with connectivity. It's been fine online. There's not that many players on it anymore. It really dropped off pretty fast. I think there's maybe 4,000, 5,000 players online, and that was it. Not that much. But, I mean, I just played the main campaign online mode and the main, like, conquest team deathmatch mode. I tried playing a capture the flag mode, but there was, like, 12 people worldwide on that play type, so it ended up being, like, a 1v1, which is impossible to do. Yeah, I mean, but if you're just looking for, like, if you can get that game really cheap, and you're looking for something to shoot things up with, I guess it's all right. It's a nice change of pace from other things I've been playing. So, I mean, I probably won't stick with it too long. I'll probably get to like level 20, 25 and kind of phase out of it. But it can get kind of repetitive. There's only so many maps you can do before you realize, okay, I'm going to take this route. I'm going to do this exact same thing. Blah, 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 blah. But that's not really a major issue. It's just an okay game, I guess. And then also, this past weekend,
question about that.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Even this late in its life, did it feel like there was enough content there without a single player? Yes, I'm beating that horse again. For $60? No.
I mean, they added like 15 new maps, like free new maps, DLC stuff.
Right.
And even then, it just feels so empty without any sort of single player campaign. I mean, because the way that they do the campaign is you go online and you press, oh, I want to play a campaign playlist. And the campaign is basically, there'll be like a first-person cutscene, like that sets up the battle you're about to go into. And then it's just like an online team deathmatch battle with its theme, because there's little cutscenes that happen on the top right of your screen every so often. Like, oh, the plant's blowing up. We got to get everyone out. And then everyone has to leave the plant. Oh, we got it. But, you know, there's only like maybe 10 of those campaign missions, and you can play both sides. But even then, it's just basically a setup for the match online. You don't even really pay attention to it. I think it definitely would have benefited from some sort of single player, just so that it takes away from the monotony of doing a match after a match after a match after a match. You know, I can only play like 45 minutes before I'm like, okay, this is so repetitive that I need to do something else now.
Yeah, you know what strikes me as funny about that is I don't even know why Respawn bothered. That tells me they weren't confident in themselves. Because, like, I know when Battlefront comes out, you will be given the option to play multiplayer, play with bots, and then I think co-op. And that's it. There will be none of this cheesy-ass cutscenes claiming they gave you some kind of story when they didn't. You know, and so...
Yeah, it's almost at the point like where like I'd get pissed off when the cutscenes come up, because like I don't even care. Like I'm in the middle of an online match, basically. You know, I don't want to have to like listen to like, oh, my name, like this is Sergeant McCallan. I'm going down. The fire's everywhere. And this is like the fifth time you've heard this like monologue he gives off. I'm like, dude, I just die. I've already gone through this. This is like some weird sort of repeating death scenario where I have to watch you keep dying over and over again.
I know that there's going to be a second Titanfall, when it'll be, or second. Well, Respawn has a long-term publishing deal with EA. I just hope like hell if they decide to backtrack and make a single player that they don't try and incorporate elements from that. You know what I mean? Because nobody's going to know what the hell they're talking about.
No, I mean, I don't really don't know any of the characters. I mean, I don't know like why they're fighting. I mean, there's a very short, like 2 minute setup video when you load the game the first time. But even then, you're like, I don't really care. I just want to play the online part of it. And the other dumb thing is when you do like these online campaign missions, it puts you into a random one. So like, I think the first time I played online, I played like the last campaign mission. So, I mean, there's really no reason for you to care about the storyline in this game.
If, you know, that's one of the places where this brick wall between playing with consoles and PC pissed me off. Because if Pat was going to play it quite a bit and I could just join him via PC, I might have thought about a game like Titanfall. Yet, we're stonewalled off from each other because he's on Xbox One and I'm on PC. So, it's just really pointless for me to even think about, you know, and so... Mm-hmm. It's like I already talked to Agent K because I play with him predominantly on PC anymore. Are you getting Battlefront? And he's like, probably not. And I'm like, okay, I'm not either then because they've already pissed me off with no single player. In a universe that's got like the most to build from for a single player. You know, and so I might have caved and got it if he was going to be interested in it. But since he's not, there's no reason for me to buy it. Because I can't play with anybody that's going to get it on console. You know, and I'm thinking that, again, that Windows 10 and Xbox, what they're doing together, might creep out to everything eventually. But until it does, I can't be bothered with a lot of shooters. I just honestly can't. But what else have you been doing?
I was just going to say this. Also, this past weekend, I did play a lot of Splatoon. They have these things called Splatfests that happen every Saturday, every so often. And basically, the few days before the Splatfest happens, you can pick a side. You know, so the first one I remember, it was like cats versus dogs. And so you pick a side, like that's your team. And when you play on that Saturday, everyone that's on your team will be on like the cat team or they'll be on the dog team. And then at the end of the weekend, then they'll announce the results of like who won the Splatfest. So the first one was cats, dogs. And there was another one that was like water slides, roller coasters. And then this one was Decepticons versus Autobots.
It's badass.
Yeah, which was kind of cool that they got that connection going. There's a lot of people drawing, you know, a bunch of Megatron stuff and, you know, Optimus Prime stuff. So I chose Autobots, of course, just because I hate Starscream and I can't imagine being on a team with that person with that voice. So I played a few games. They upped the level cap, which is nice. So it went from level 20 was the highest you could get to level 50. And you could get an A-plus ranking before, and now you can get like an S-plus. So there's definitely more incentive to keep playing because I had maxed out. And so I was like, I don't really want to play if they're gonna up this cap at some point, because I'm just wasting experience. So it's nice they finally upped that. And they really went crazy with these maps. I mean, there's like 10 maps, 10, 12 maps now that are on this constant rotation cycle. So, I mean, when it started, there's only 3 maps. So, I mean, they've been adding a map at least once every 2 weeks, which has been nice because there's always a reason to keep loading the game up to see what is new.
Yeah, it's quite something how much content they've been adding, just in terms of, again, the maps, but then the weapons too, and all the different little even the little costume things, and the Splatfest, and a couple of new modes too, for that matter.
Yeah, there's a online mode. There's it's sort of like a bomb assault game type. There's like this little creature thing in the middle of the map, and you have to shoot it to activate picking it up. And then once you pick it up, then you get like a bazooka gun, but you move really slow. And you have to try to get all the way to the other team's base. Or maybe it's your own base. I don't remember, but it's like one bomb assault or two bombs, one bomb assault in like Halo. And there's another one where it's like King of the Hill. And there's another one where it's a moving King of the Hill, like a tug of war King of the Hill. Like the hill's a platform and you can jump on it. And as long as you're staying on the platform, then it moves towards the enemy base. And other people can knock you off. And the platform goes back and forth based on how many people are pushing it. So, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on. And like John said, with the new weapons, I mean, there's like 4 new weapon classes. I mean, which I think that's crazy. I mean, when has there been a shooter that's made 4 new weapon classes within the first month of it coming out? Like, I mean, the game is always developing, so it's all, there's always a reason to turn them on.
Yeah, I have a feeling that when Mario Maker comes out, they're going to be doing things like that, constantly adding new tools and new stuff to put into the levels, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really happy that I got this game, you know, because it's definitely paid itself off easily with the amount of stuff that's come out.
It's a little bit less than Peter's rotation now, but it's I mean, he goes back to it and plays a few things every now and again, but it's not quite as every day he wants to play a half an hour or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it can get kind of intense, but he might get back into it.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not going to talk about what he's been playing lately, but yeah, he'll probably go back to it at some point.
But that's one of those ones that seems like it'll have a high user base, long-term user base, because of the fact that it's on Nintendo, it's more kid-friendly. So I see it sticking around longer than the standard year most shooters do. You know, that's part of the issue, Glaze. I mean, Titanfall is almost a year old. It's old news at that point. You know, long gone are the days of, Metal Gear, or not Metal Gear, Medal of Honor Allied Assault servers lasting 5 years, or, you know, Star Wars Battlefront 2 servers lasting 6-7 years. Private servers probably do, but nobody, and actually we're going to get into that later, or at least I'm going to give the audience a reminder. You know, private servers and the game company servers are two different things, and a lot of people apparently forget that. But I'm glad Splatoon's doing what Nintendo needed it to do. It's like one bright spot and a bunch of awful for Nintendo at the lately.
Yeah, so
that's good.
Oh yeah, it's great. I mean, this and Mario Maker, I think. I mean, because have they even released anything between Splatoon and Mario Maker?
Like first party, you mean?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah, so I mean, that'll be two hits in a row. I mean, yeah, it's a long dry spell, but I mean, it is summer, so.
Agent K is still convinced that Mario Maker is a piece of shit. He just, I think because he's a level designer himself for his job, I think he has this mental block. I was making fun of him the other day about it on Skype. Dude, Mario Maker's looking really good. Shut up. No, it's looking really good.
I'm gonna put him out of a job.
Yeah, I seriously doubt that. That's, you know, I seriously doubt that's his issue. I think he's another one, and that's why I don't pick on him that much about it, because even though he's a close friend and we're always picking on each other, you know, there's a lot of people who still have a very, very sour taste in their mouth, even more so than you guys seem to display about what Nintendo has done in the last few years. And I think it tends to color, I'm not saying this is Agent K, I'm just saying in general, I think it tends to color a lot of people's things. And the premise of Mario Maker is pretty simplistic until you really start looking at it. I'm hoping it does well, and I think it's going to.
Yeah, I think it should do well. I don't know if it'll be like what turns things, everything turns the ship around, but I think it'll do well.
They're going to need more than one game to turn the ship around at this point, I think. Maybe not. Anyways, John, what have you and Peter been up to this week?
Well, last week I talked a little bit about Transformers War for Cybertron that he was playing and finished. And this week we went down to my local EB Games to see if we could find the sequel, Follow Cybertron, and sure enough we did, and found it yesterday. And so Peter's jumped on that guy pretty hard so far, and I've been hanging around, you know, watching what's going on with it, you know, see what kind of changes there are. It's I think there's about 2 years difference between the first one and the second one. And the game itself is actually, it seems pretty good. Like, it's a little less, like, gameplay-wise, the first one had, you know, it was kind of squad-based, where you were one part of a three-member team. So instead of a three-member team where you're, you know, you're Optimus Prime with two friends, or you can be Bumblebee or Ratchet or something. You're kind of one person amongst a full-scale war. So, like, I think if you play the multiplayer, you're inserted in, but it's not a given that you're necessarily always with a crew. So you're, you know, so far, Peter's been playing as Optimus quite a bit, except for the opening sequence, which was very, very epic, actually, where you're the Autobots on board the Ark, trying to get away from Cybertron and go through the portal, and you get attacked by the Decepticons, and Bumblebee is, you know, the focal point there. And but on now, and then it rewinds. I think it says 8 hours beforehand. Before that is when it kind of picks up, and you're Optimus, and you're the Prime, and you're leading the Decepticon, the Autobots, sorry, and you're trying to get to get the help of all your friends, and rally toward getting the Ark into the air. And one thing, some of the things that stand out about the sequel is that there's suddenly color, because in the first one, it was very metallic looking, like everything was black and gray, and the environments kind of looked the same, not the same, but yeah, very similar to each other. Not a lot of variety. Well, in this one, especially when you're on the Ark, which is, if you guys remember out there, the Ark is sort of like a yellowy, goldish colored ship. So when you're going around the Ark, everything is bright gold colored, and all the Autobots, like all their bodies, they really, they're very vivid colors. Like Optimus is very red rather than a dark red. They're going for maybe a little less grit. But I will say that in terms of the story and the way it's presented, the war that's going on between the Autobots and Decepticons, it is actually a little more gritty, because you can actually talk to the people, as you're going through the various scenes. You can stop and chat with them, and not that you really say much to them, but they tell you about their plight and the Decepticons attacking and how they felt about that, and they could be injured. So it's trying to immerse you a little more in the wartime aspect of it, I guess, with the story and the dialogue. And they added a couple of things, storyline wise, like things you see in games all the time, like audio tapes, where you hear Optimus Prime's log from whenever, or another Transformers, account of a certain event, or historical significance of Omega Supreme, and he was supposed to be unstoppable, but yet he, had his weaknesses and blah blah blah. It's kind of interesting backstory stuff, that kind of keeps you immersed. So, Peter's not really picking up on that kind of stuff so much, and also the weapon upgrade system. Like, the first game was a little more simplified in its mechanics in that way. Like this one tells you different ways you can run, and you can, simple things like in Gears of War, where you can look over the left shoulder or the right shoulder by pressing a button. Like that's in there now, where it wasn't in the first one, because it wasn't really that important. But now, like, trying to explain to Peter, sometimes you're going to want to peer around this corner because you're getting shot at by all these Decepticons. He didn't quite understand what the difference was at first. Like, is this one better? Is that one better? Like, why am I doing it? And because the enemies in this game, as I tried to explain to him, like, it seems to be a level of difficulty harder. Like, there's a lot more enemies shooting at you on screen at any given time, and they're also a little more. I'll call it agile, or maybe the AI is a touch better, because they'll run and hide more so than they did in the first game. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of have to be a little more strategic in where you're positioning yourself. Like, Peter likes to run and gun a bit and get in there. In the first game, it wasn't too hard to run up to a Decepticon through the battlefield and just nail him with your sword, your energy sword. In this one, you probably don't want to run and gun too much, because you kind of have to hang back and pick guys off a little more. Even on easy, I mean, there's a lot of bullets flying, and you have to kind of think on your feet a lot more than what he maybe was used to. Now, he claims that this game is better than the other one, and even though he was probably getting a little more frustrated more quickly in this one, just by virtue of him dying a little bit more, but the I asked him why this one was so much better, and he says his first answer was because you get to turn into a dinosaur. Because on the cover of this one, you can see you can see Grimlock on there, right? And when he first loaded up the game, he thought that meant that everybody got to turn into a car and a dinosaur. And I said, no. There's a guy named Grimlock that you'll meet, and hopefully you'll be able to play as him, which would be kind of fun. And Yeah, so he's enjoying it. It seems pretty good. Like the music is very, I noticed the music has taken a step up from the first game as well. It's suitably epic for the wartime scenes that you're seeing, and there's we're still very early, and Peter has awoken Metroplex, the gigantic Autobot, and the really gigantic Autobot, and 'cause in the first game you fight Triptychon. The giant Decepticon one. Though I thought Triptychon was as big as Omega Supreme, but Metroplex is massive. He's as big as it is. He's a city kind of guy. And anyway, you can use him. It's in this in a pretty fun scene where you can use kind of like sending in an airstrike. You can target something and with the left bumper and then press A for Metroplex to either drop a bunch of his bombs on it or to walk over to like say a stationary cannon and smash it with his arms and tear it to pieces. And the function of setting a target for something to come along and do something else, Peter hasn't quite got the multi-button thing yet. Like he's very used to just going in and either shooting, switching buttons. He doesn't even reload manually very much. He kind of lets it auto reload, which kind of catches him in a bad spot sometimes. But he's doing the basic controls. I will say that he's getting better at using the right stick to look around, to aim. He's getting pretty good at it. And I think as much as Splatoon encourages you to use the motion control, I think if he got back into that, I think he would find himself being a lot better than he used to be at the aiming. Now that he kind of gets a grasp on two sticks and playing that way with shooters, but yeah, it seems like a pretty good game. I'll probably keep you guys out there updated on how we progress with it. I think this game leads up to the finale. I'm assuming will be the Autobots leaving Cybertron for good and maybe even crash landing on Earth. I wonder if there's an Earth level in it, but I presume that would be maybe the third game. I don't know, maybe. And other than that game, Peter gave me Kirby and the Rainbow Curse for Wii U for my birthday, and it's a game that I kind of held off buying myself. I ended up getting Captain Toad first, but Kirby, I had heard it wasn't as difficult or challenging as Kirby and so yeah, this is the Rainbow Curse. Not as challenging as the Canvas Curse game on DS. So I kind of and I heard, also heard that you play almost exclusively on the gamepad. You don't really have to look at the TV very much at all when you're playing. Using the stylus to draw your rainbow line for Kirby to roll across and dash across and stuff to get him around the levels, but. But that being said, and what I just said there is completely true. Like if you play single person as Kirby, you're the TV is fine for looking up and looking at a cutscene or something like that. But otherwise, you're looking at the gamepad entirely. You could easily turn the TV off and never have to look at the at it at all. Which is, I don't know why it seems weird for a $40 game to be gamepad only. It kind of is. You kind of think you would have the big TV experience with a $40 or $50 game. Like this is like 40. It's a value. It's sort of a value price game at $45, I think it was, but for Canadian. But that being said, it's a beautiful little game. Like everything is clay, like claymation style, right? Everything is molded. Everything has a very three-dimensional textured look on the screen. So it's not like Kirby's Epic Yarn, where everything's made out of cloth. Like I said, it's made out of clay, and your paintbrush kind of draws this 3D little rope of colors. And again, he crawls around. It's the gameplay is almost exactly like the 3DS, the DS game, but with the big difference is that it does have multiplayer, and so Peter was able to take the Wii remote and play as a Waddledee with a spear, I think it is. And so we're playing cooperatively, so I'm drawing lines to help him progress and myself to progress. And I think when you play single player, now I say this saying that I haven't played single player by myself yet. I've only played it multi, and I think, based on the way some of the puzzles are, you kind of have to have that second person. So I don't know if the computer plays an AI character for you to kind of to be your companion, but certainly in multiplayer, and there's up to you can have up to four different colored Waddle Dees, so up to five person co-op multiplayer going on at once. Making it through the levels, so the Waddle Dee has some of the same properties. Like he can use his spear to cut through dirt and dig himself a tunnel through the way I would if I, scratched it away with the stylus. But he can attack enemies much more directly. Like I have to tap Kirby to make him dash, and that dash is what is your attack, or to smash a brick or something. But the actual making the Waddle Dee attack with the B button, just like spear ahead of him. It kind of has a, it's not the whip like it is in Kirby Epic Garen, but it has a little of a similar feel, similar enough that Peter kind of jumped on and got into it very quickly. Now, not that I think that a Kirby game is going to be very difficult to get into, but you know what I'm saying? Like it's different yet familiar, and it's pretty good that way. But again, the music is good, it looks beautiful. And again, a simple gameplay, getting Kirby from the beginning to the door at the end. There's bosses and that kind of thing. But you can use the lines to do different things. Like there's a couple spots in an underground level where there's a waterfall coming down, and you draw the line to stop the water from falling down, so that he could get through to hit a switch that stopped the waters, and I can get through. So like just the cooperative aspect of that makes me think that there must be some sort of a co-op thing going on, even in single player, even if it is an AI character. We played for the first chapter and a little bit, and then Wanda came home from her fitness class, and we wanted to show it to her, and so we played through World 1 again with her in three-person co-op. So it's pretty good. You can use any of the controllers, like the Pro or the Wii Remote or whatever you want to control Kirby, or sorry, the Waddle Dee. Lots of options, so it seems pretty good. It's kind of the family game that I've been waiting for that I didn't realize would be that good. Especially going into the fall now, when the weather cools off and we just find ourselves at home in the evening rather than out and about doing stuff at the park or whatever. It should be pretty good for family play, and that's it.
I'm glad that one's working out for you.
Yeah.
Seems fun. A couple things off the top. And then I had a question for you guys. You're welcome to chime in on these couple things. The first thing, and I had to do some checking because I saw on Twitter that maybe it wasn't the case, but I'm prepared to say that this is the real deal. Metal Gear Solid V: The Phantom Pain from everybody's favorite fucktards, Konami. The retail PC version, right? Go to the store, buy the box, you get the retail disc. You know what the DVD has on it?
What?
A Steam installer, and that is it.
Really?
So you have your CD key, and you have to download Steam and download the game from Steam, and then use your key.
Wow.
I don't want to get into the internet bandwidth issues and caps and all that. We know it's still a thing. But I brought it up because I think it takes first place in my list of company fuck you consumers
Yeah.
in gaming lately.
And you know that's a massive game too. Like you know that's just
It is a 28 GB download, which is about a standard MMO. Although the MMOs are starting to get the fuck out of hand too. Actually, it's big, but that ain't shit compared to what fucking GTA 5 did to me.
Oh
Like
no.
GTA 5 was 60. Yeah. In fact, GTA 5 is the reason that either I'll do it at Christmas time when I've got a little, if I get cash from the family or whatever, I'm probably gonna get a second, another hard drive that I can then use, in other PCs just because my backup hard drive is not big enough for shit anymore, for for recording or for having Steam on, and I'd really like to have Steam off my OS drive. But when a game's 60 gigs, what the fuck are you going to do? It was 55 or 60. So 28's actually not that bad, but I just... Oh, fucking Konami. When I saw the headline on Twitter, and I love Destructoid, I love the dude Nero that founded Destructoid, but a couple of the guys they've hired recently are just dipshits. And so I've kind of not been using their stories as much because it's too much hipster troll snark. It's like, really? You this unclever dude? But when I saw this, I'm like, I'm going to let this marinate for a minute and make sure that this is not somebody on Twitter just having a good time with some of the blogs looking for clickbait. Which Destructoid, unfortunately, as much as I love them, does at times, not to the levels of Kotaku and, you know, all those idiots that I can't think of their names right now, Gizmodo and stuff like that. But I just was like, wow. So, yeah, if you're going to buy Metal Gear Solid The Phantom Pain for PC, I'd buy it digital if your internet connection will allow you to. Well, and the internet connection thing is something I have to walk a very fine line on, too, because it seems like either you have my connection, so that makes it okay, you know, an upper-end cable or fiber connection.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have anything below that, then it's bullshit. My problem is while, yes, it's not instantaneous, there's some levels below upper end that are still acceptable for downloading digital games. You just have to have some patience and be smart about when you do it. But the hive mind seems to act like if you don't have fiber, everything else is 56K dial-up, and how dare you?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I have a bit of a hard time being sympathetic because some idiots will then go, well, I'm on a 7-meg cable connection. Well, that's good enough. Start it before you go to school in the morning when the bus comes and picks you up, you know, and shut up. I mean, I feel very fortunate that I have the connection I do. It makes doing all the stuff we do so much easier and gaming, obviously. But, you know, I'd be okay with less if that's what I had to do. You just plan better. But this is still unacceptable, and it's just Konami being fuck sticks.
Yeah, because Konami.
All I heard out of there was gasps out of you, Glace. Would you like to say anything, make fun of them, before I move to the next thing?
I feel sorry for anyone still at the Lafayette dorms that got that. They're going to be there a long time.
Yeah, that's like what a 20-hour download, probably. Could you even get... No, you couldn't even get a gig an hour, could you?
No, I mean, it'd go fast at night when no one was on, but if you were on all during the day, I mean, it was you could barely load Facebook, so...
I have to wonder, though, with, like, college dorms, that's probably more the PS4, Xbox One market. You know, there's a tiny, tiny, tiny glimmer of sense in why Konami did this, i.e. they don't really give a fuck about the PC market, and they figure anybody buying it on PC has a rig that has a really good internet connection, and they're probably buying it digital anyway. Still doesn't make it right, but I kind of saw why they were doing this. It's stupid, because you've taken the time to print a disc with a label and burn a Steam installer to it, and packaging, it could not have been that much more expensive to burn the files to disk.
Mm-hmm.
Just Jesus. Okay, so the other quick thing that I had was Star Wars Battlefront won't have a server browser on PC. It will have matchmaking. Now, the PC Master Race freak out about this was inevitable, and to a point, reasonable. I don't understand why companies do this. They know it's not going to end well. But here's my bigger problem with it, both at game makers and publishers and at PC gamers. Let's start with the publishers. How about you make a server browser that actually works? Because even the ones that games have don't work that well. The search doesn't work that well. The you know, trying to favorite doesn't work that well. I play a lot of multiplayer PC games, granted in the survival genre, but they all seem to have in-game browsers and they all seem to suck balls. So this one not having one, like, really doesn't piss me off because of that. And the other thing that PC gamers love for you to believe is that they don't, without a server browser, they'll never be able to connect. They'll never be able to do this, that, and the other thing. Now, I don't know on Battlefront specifically, but I do know on a lot of other games, the crying and the bitching and the kvetching was because they wanted the mean evil companies to do what they want. You know what I do with 90% of multiplayer PC games that I join with shooters, survival games, this and that? I have an IP address, and I type it in manually because it's 10 times quicker than trying to search for anything because the browsers that do exist are so broken. Any of the DayZ I've played, any of the Arma 3 stuff I've played, any 7 Days to Die, any Counter-Strike, even Counter-Strike with private servers. You know, because PC gamers, for those of you that play on consoles, love to make you think that it's all the company's responsibility. You know, dedicated this, dedicated that. And they like to gloss over the fact that private servers owned by people, like I have one right now for Arma 3 Exile for Kay and I to screw around on for the month. Cost me $12 because it was an introductory offer for a new mod. You know, that server's passworded, but I can let anybody on it I want. I just got to give them an IP address and a port. And in this case, a password. You know, they type that in a little thing. So while EA and DICE really need to stop doing this shit because they've tried it before with Battlefield, don't ever let PC gamers make you think that that this just nobody's going to be able to connect to anything using matchmaking. I also, there's also the thing of, don't you think, Glace, that most of the Battlefield games we've played together, which would be Bad Company 2 and Battlefield 3, were never balanced all that well with different level people?
No. I mean, not that they balance at all.
No. That's why DICE is doing this, or that's their reasoning for it. Because Battlefield 4, from friends of mine I know that have played it, and whoever played Hardline, it was the same problem. You know, you'd have six prestige yata yatas on one team and a bunch of level ones on the other, and it's like, oh great, we're fucked. So that's why a lot of these companies are switching to matchmaking, but PC gamers think they are the cream of the crop, which they're not, for one, and so they're going to cry and bitch. And if this doesn't have a search feature, then I'm more on the PC gamer side, because matchmaking it by itself is a pain in the taco. I actually hated server browsers when I was playing mostly console. Just put us in a game, don't split us up, put us on the same team, you know, if Glace and Pat and I and G and whoever else were playing together. Don't split us up, just put us on the same team and we'll go.
Mm-hmm.
But for those of you fuming at home because you're a PC gamer, that there is a sensible reason why DICE is trying something else, but it's just they're never going to win because the crybabies throw a fit because it's, you know, well, we have server browsers since 1996, dudes. We need it forever. Not if it's putting me on unbalanced teams where I'm getting my head shoved up my ass every 5 minutes by a dude 50 levels higher than me.
Yeah, it's funny how we hang on to things, you know? Like, I was listening to a wrestling podcast today, and they were talking about a Reddit thread about some, you know, something wrestling related, and one of the hosts, he made the comment in how it's amazing how Reddit is so popular today because it's a message board. You know, message boards were, you know, he said, I can understand why message boards would have been big back in the day because, you know, what else was there other than posting some words up and away you go. And but you know, in 2015, there's so many different ways to express yourself and get on there and interact. But message boards are still like where it's at. It's so weird, and people would never let it go, right?
I love the fact that he called it a message board. Somewhere there are a bunch of hardcore Reddit users clutching their chest, like Fred fucking Sanford, because they think of it as more than that, don't they, Glace? I mean, basically, it's a fucking forum board with upvoting. But wouldn't you say that most Reddit users think it's a much more diverse site than that? But in reality, it's a HBB forum?
I mean, I don't think most Reddit users care, really. I mean, I think the reason why Reddit is so popular is because it looks like you're doing work when you browse it at work, you know, if you have it in like text only mode. And that's why message boards are so popular, is because you can incognito mode that during any working hour. You know, if you're on like a site like CNN or something, there's all these stuff coming up all over the place, you know, ads, it's kind of obvious what you're doing.
Yeah, or reading webcomics at work.
Yeah, but if you're just looking at some text-based site, you know, it's a lot less obvious if you're, you know, goofing off.
It's related to the show, they're related to your phones and how everyone thought that everybody would be using video, you know, video messaging to talk to each other face to face, and you know, all these little bells and whistles. But no, everybody just wants to text. Everyone's just happy enough to sending one little text message and never answered the phone. Like, it's the simplest things are, you know, that hang on being so much more important.
I'm kind of backlashing against that, because like, I spend whatever free time I do have in Worm, and I'll be spending it some time in Glacinate over that game we're no longer allowed to mention the name of. That's, by the way, Glacinate's official name. We won't talk about it next week if we do actually find time to play together. Trust us, we won't. I've had enough with getting yelled at for it. It's gotten to the point now where I'm so tired. I'm tired of having to type things out in text that would be so much quicker to tell, even with my rambling style and voice. Like, I finally had to tell Quigley the other day, look, dude, if you want to hear the story, hop on Skype in 20 minutes and I'll tell you the story. Because even with me and my love of talking, it's going to take less time to tell than it will for me to type it and type it in a way that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I have that problem with friends, though. You're absolutely right about people hanging on to text, because it's like, And it generally tends to be older people, like guys my age or older than me. They want to send you a phone call via text.
Yeah.
And it's like, you fucking shithead, just call. I'm not reading through all this. That's the only time I pull the TLDR, except mine is different. You're a fucking idiot. Didn't read it. Call me. Is my general response to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are still some things that should be transmitted via voice, at least. Generally, most of the people I know, no offense, guys, but I'm going to offend you, I don't want to see your faces. Voice is enough for me, thanks. No, you're both fine-looking gentlemen. But honestly, it's just, video is almost too distracting for me. There's some Skype stuff I have to do that have to be on video, but it's just, you know, when I do my cam shows and stuff like that, get that started, see how long it goes on. Fat white dudes are us. That's the site I belong to. Anyway, I'm glad Glace left at that. I figured it was going to bomb. But you know, for the most part, some people just, they find they love texting, so they want to do it with everything. Kay and I bitch about this constantly. It's been cut out. I couldn't tell you how many times Kay and I have had this conversation again and again and again when one of our phones goes off while we're playing. And how many videos? I think I've left it in one video with bits cut out that were a little bit too personal information to be left in. You know, like real names and robberies we've committed and stuff. But anyway, but I bet we have that. I bet if we're on Skype for more than 4 or 5 hours, we're at some point, we're bitching about somebody texting us War and Peace. And it happens to him a lot, because in his job, they seem to think that text is faster than email. And so he's, you know, they're trying to text him stuff to do when an email with, you know, format would be better.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right about clinging on to stuff. It just, I don't know, Glace, you're more of a console gamer, but you're definitely a shooter player. When they gave you the browser option on consoles, did you ever use it? Like, I know Battlefield 3 had a pretty decent one as they go. Or did you just go straight into matchmaking and screw it?
No, I would use it. I mean, I would definitely look for game types where it looked like more serious players were playing. Like, not serious and like, this is intense, but like, you know, this is like an actual, people are playing the game, you know?
People playing the game type is what you're saying.
Yes, yeah. There was like, I remember Battlefield 3, there was a server where it was like, this is a capture the flag or whatever. This is like a conquest map, whatever they were. You know, if you're not playing the game type, we're going to kick you out. And I was like, oh, great.
See, you know, that's...
I was getting annoyed with people just, you know, playing Team Deathmatch the entire time.
I did see that some on Battlefield 3 on console, and it kind of did my heart proud, because one of the reasons I've leaned back more towards PC is because you have player controlled servers. And if you find one where those guys want to play Capture the Flag or Rush mode, which Rush mode, when it's people who want to play the mode, is fun, you know, on Battlefield, but we could never find it on console because it's just dickheads playing deathmatch, which really doesn't work in Rush. You know, and you tend to find that more on PC, but you're right. I do remember seeing people basically saying that if you try and play deathmatch in here, we're going to kick you. And then watching people get kicked. Oh, don't get me wrong, John. I think game browsers still have a place and have a use, but you'd be surprised how little we actually use them. And I'm just getting sick of PC gamers glossing over a lot of things, like I am with a lot of stuff. And it's because I care. It's like, make something that works, but don't sit here and give me a bunch of bullshit like you're being nailed to a stake or something. Yeah, because you're not. Your Cheeto-covered fingers can click a couple more times for matchmaking, Bubba. You're going to live. Other thing I saw this week that I actually have a question for you gentlemen on. Shaq News was reporting that Lionsgate Films, which was a slight bit concerning, because Lionsgate's kind of known for being hit or miss, is currently developing a film based on a film based on the Borderlands video game series. The studio will collaborate with 2K and Gearbox. God, I hope the CEO of Gearbox has nothing to do with it. He's like the Yui Bowl of video games at this point. Yada, yada, yada. Okay, so now, there's a little bit in here where the guy says, no other information was given regarding the film, although we can't help but assume, love when blogs do that, because it usually means they're going to be so wrong it's not even funny, it'll offer a similar feel as 2015's Mad Max, because, you know, to the 12-year-old that wrote this post, that was the first Mad Max film ever. one up in you in the grandpa department, Glace. Can they make a Borderlands film, which has such a diverse group of characters across both games, and hell, even throw in the Telltale prequel games, without it just feeling like another post-apocalyptic Hollywood fuckfest? Glace, you first.
I mean, I think before this new Mad Max movie came out, I think I'd say go for it. But I know that Mad Max is way older than Borderlands, and I've seen the old ones as well. But I don't know. I think it would just be too similar stylistically if they did do it live action. If they did find a way to do it animated wise, I think that'd be pretty cool. But I mean, that's a long stretch.
I like the idea of animation just because of how those games are cel shaded. Cel shaded 2-hour movie of something at some point. I think it could be done really well, but with people who are fully behind the project. John, you answer the question, and then I might have an answer to your question, Glace, that may change your opinion, but may not. I don't know. Go ahead, John.
Well, I think, granted, I haven't played. I haven't played any of the Borderlands games, Telltale or otherwise, but. I mean, I think I have a bit of a grasp on the style of the movie, but I would say from a filmmaking point of view, I mean, it would take the right team. You know what I mean? I mean, you can say that about any movie, really. You know, to be able to put together an ensemble cast and have them say things that are interesting to hear and have a unique look. I mean, I think it could be done. There might be the risk of it being a little Mad Max-y based on what I know about the game or games, but it comes down to the team, right? You know, if someone who actually gives a crap about the source material and can, you know, translate that to the screen, like you know, the obvious comparison is how Marvel is able to take, you know, comic books and make it into a movie. Games are a bit different, I suppose, but it's not that different to try to take, you know, source material from one medium and put it into another and make it work with you know, care and attention and you know, a story that's actually well written and not just something throwaway.
Okay, here's my take. Glacinator has a valid concern. John is absolutely right about you have to put a good team together. And once you have that good team together, and I'd actually like to see a director that's not one of the nerd gods. Hopefully they're all busy fucking up Star Wars. That's right. I'm still maintaining that there's a high chance that movie's going to suck. I can't decide. I still, to right now, we're getting closer and closer to Star Wars releasing. I can't decide whether I want it to suck for the chaos or or be good. I'll be entertained either way because I like cheap popcorn flicks. So if it just ends up being that, like the prequels were to me, I win. But no, with back to Borderlands, now that I'm done harassing the Star Wars fans, if you have that good team in place, the first thing you do is don't make it for gamers. Fuck them. Because they're not going to care anyway. They're going to bitch. They're going to whine. They're going to cry. They're going to say it's not right. They didn't get the ending they want. You need to release a DLC movie ending. So just stop altogether making them for gamers. Just treat Borderlands like you would a book as source material and fuck it after that. Now that said, even in the most recent Mad Max movie, which I have not seen, but I've seen enough of to know that this is true, there are not a lot of compelling individual characters. There's a few on the good guy side, you know, Max, and then the woman that Charlize Theron plays, and then you have a few on the bad guy side, plus the flamethrower guitar guy. I only know about him because the internet will not let me not know about him. Borderlands has a far more built-in, compelling character set, and even the ones you play as could be fleshed out. Handsome Jack's pretty well built. The main baddie in the game. Sorry, spoilers. If you haven't played Borderlands 1 and 2 by now, kiss my ass.
Spoilers, man.
Huh? Spoilers, dude. Spoilers, dude. How old are those games now? Well, even anything I'm saying is not going to hurt the games. Luckily for you, it's been so long since I played both of them, I forgot what the story was anyway. You know, I mean, you have an ass ton of compelling characters. Tiny Tina alone, I'd probably pay $7 to see on film. Although Ashley Burch did such a great job voicing her in the game. Tiny Tina alone is worth playing Borderlands 2 just by herself. It's hilarious. That I think, Glace, they could overcome the fact that it's a post-apocalyptic, similar to Mad Max setting in live action. Because the characters are just so much better. Nah, better's not the right word. Just so much more fleshed out and have potential for it to be about the writing in an apocalyptic backdrop. And the stories are different. You know, Borderlands has a post-apocalyptic feel, that's not really what the story is about. Most post-apocalyptic movies, like Mad Max, like Book of Eli, name your favorites, are about surviving or about reaching this, you know, promised land. I mean, hell, even for the kind of crap that it was, Waterworld was even the same. Borderlands kind of puts a different spin on that. As much as I love making fun of Pritchard, the writers on those games did a really good job. So I think, like, there's possibility to separate them and make them different enough that the average moviegoer would go see it. But it'd have to be done very well and very carefully, which I'm not sure would happen with a video game source material movie. I'm kind of in Glace's camp. I'd much rather see a 2-hour Borderlands movie cel-shaded.
I think that's a cool idea, actually. It would definitely be unique.
Because even though Hey Ass What You Playing and the brother and sister behind it are kind of hipster douche canoes, Tiny Tina, voiced by Ashley Burch, is probably one of the funniest fucking game characters. She's basically just a psychotic kid. Like I said, if you ever see Borderlands on the cheap audience, I'll pick it up just so you get to, it's about, I don't know, it's 4 or 5 hours in when you get to Tiny Tina, and trust me, it's worth the 4 or 5 hours, maybe 2 if you just ran through it. The second time I played through Borderlands, I was just hauling ass so I could get to Tiny Tina and her little set of non-DLC missions. But do you think that's possible, Glace? If the characters are more fleshed out, could you then see them separating it, or is it still too close to Mad Max?
I mean, even setting-wise, it's going to be a problem. That's the main thing. I mean, I can see characters, you know, being different. You know, it's more humorous. You know, if it is animated, it looks different. But I mean, the vehicle stuff plus it being in desert sort of setting, I don't know.
It's not in desert. It's not in desert entirely. The first one was...
No, I've only played the first one.
Yeah, the first one is... if they based it solely on the first one, you'd be at 100% right. The second one has different biomes and environments that you could draw from and break it up with. And actually, you just brought up another good point. Mad Max isn't exactly known for humor, whereas Borderlands is.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of does it. And I kind of like that. The total serious business is serious without even a little black humor or dark humor. Just never has been my thing. I mean, I love the Mad Max films. I haven't seen the most current one, but I've seen every other one.
I mean, I think if they were to make a movie, if they based it around the interactions between the squads, like the squad characters.
Oh, right.
You know, and then have Claptrap, you know, comedic relief, you know, like your average Disney, you know, sidekick that just says random quips. I think that would work.
Oh, and Claptrap's even funnier in the second one.
You just have to distance yourself from Mad Max, which, I mean, is so hard because they borrow so much from the same sort of stylistic settings.
So yeah,
you have to give audiences a reason why they should see this, even though they just saw Mad Max. You know, I mean, for most gamers, that's going to be, you know, easily done enough. But it's the average viewer, though.
Well, here's the other problem, though. Okay, so let's say that they are developing the film right now. So that probably means it's not going to come out till late 2016 and early 2017. I think Mad Max will have been far enough behind that should give them some help, too. You know, because we do have a very short-term memory when it comes to entertainment. Although with Claptrap, you got to be careful of the Jar Jar Binks thing. Because even though nobody will listen to him, Lucas has said 27,000 times Jar Jar Binks was supposed to be comedic relief like R2 and C-3PO were originally... Yes, that's correct. Those of you comedic relief deniers who claim that and it's no shit. You can find it on Reddit and other dark, dank sellers of the internet that, oh no, R2 and C-3PO were always supposed to be serious characters. No, they weren't. Are you fucking kidding me?
Never.
Well, of course, there's always people who are going to take a tangent and just believe it for all it's worth. I've never laughed harder than during the Death Star scenes when R2's screaming and beeping because blaster shots are going right by him. And he's trying to fix the X-Wing. But you do have to be careful because Jar Jar was supposed to be the same thing, and we all saw how that went horribly wrong. And that is one thing where I do agree with you, Star Wars hardcores. I don't believe some of the things that are now tacked onto Jar Jar, but he definitely failed miserably as comedic relief.
Yeah, very much so.
It was just... And I mean, what are you supposed to do? I get very tired of... And I think it's because lately I've been watching a lot of top 10 lists, and apparently top 10 lists are created by out-of-work hipsters in Seattle anymore because it's just such pretentious douchebaggery most of the time, and my normal dislike of lists at times. Apparently now, if you have any kind of stumble at all as a creator or content producer, then you're just, you suck forever after that. There is no coming back from it. I didn't research the, kind of tying into movies again super quick, I didn't read the article, but Steven Spielberg is saying essentially that maybe we might want to slow down on the superhero movies a little bit before the genre crashes and burns. I think he was essentially saying that, well, the clickbait headline was Steven Spielberg warns comic book movies are going to crash and burn. Knowing Spielberg, I would suspect that he more meant it as like, hey guys, maybe we should not do so many, oversaturate the market. It's going to happen. I don't know why that was newsworthy.
Well, it's totally... I mean, the risk of that is so obvious. I mean, how many can they really do and still maintain interest and the level of quality, right?
I don't think it's a risk. I think it's almost a certainty at this point. It's just, when is that tipping point going to happen? Because you've just made so many of them, and how many times can you get lucky with things like Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah,
you know, Ant-Man didn't do so great. Did all right. Also, like the pretentious hipsters who are surprised straight out of Compton did as well as it did. It's the friggin' biography story of NWA, one of the best gangster hip hop groups of all time. Duh, it did well. That's gonna be one I'll watch for sure when it comes out on the digital medias. Just to see what they included and what they left out from that time frame, because there's something beyond Dr. Dre abusing women, which probably they should have done a little better with that. Duh. I don't know. When does Glace, when does Bat versus Supes come out?
That's next April or May or
Is
March,
it
maybe.
okay? Yeah, it's early next year. Okay, so the next big one in the nerdgasm genre is Star Wars. Yes?
Yep.
That's what, December? Yeah.
December 5th, maybe.
I know I'm going to go see it in theaters. I'm kind of hoping that we all have an opportunity to see it before we go on our holiday hiatus.
Me and my girlfriend have been planning to
Oh,
see
I'm not
it
going. I
opening
know.
night.
Even in this tiny little shithole town where it's probably me and three other nerds, I'm not going to go see it on opening night. I have no desire to.
I thought you were, to avoid spoilers.
I may have said that at one point, but as this year goes on, I'm finding that just turning off Twitter and stuff, pretty easy to avoid spoilers if I so desire to. It's not like I'll wait 2 or 3 days in this tiny little town. I just most likely even this town will try and do like a midnight opening night showing, and that's gonna be the only showing, and I'm just not staying up for that. It's kind of like going to get a game at midnight release. Nah, I'll get it in the
Yeah.
morning.
Yeah, I won't see it. I'll probably see it opening weekend, but I don't think I'll see it opening night.
Well, if it's December 5th, let me pull up calendar real quick. If it is December 5th, that's probably like a Friday. If it's a Friday, I'll probably see it Saturday. Yeah. Oh no, December 5th is a Saturday, so I'll go catch
Okay,
it.
well, this, I don't, maybe it's the week after that. I know it's in early December.
Yeah, I knew it was. I just didn't know if there was any other comic book or. But
Well,
I.
you have Civil War coming out sometime next year.
Yeah, Cap 3.
What episode number is this? 7? No. Yeah, it's 7.
Yeah, 7.
Yeah. December 18th. Yeah, so that'll work. It's December 18th. That's a Friday. I'll go see it like Saturday matinee or Saturday night. Pretty sure I can avoid spoilers for 12 hours, most of which I'll be sleeping.
Yeah, it's I'm like it's gonna be hard to figure out what's happening in all the trailers and such, I suppose.
Wait a minute. I want to look at that again. We might not actually talk about it until we come back from our break. Yeah, we probably aren't going to talk about. We probably will not be talking about Star Wars until after we come back from our break.
Oh.
Because the next week's Christmas, and then the week after that's New Year's, and don't think either of you want to show up on Christmas Eve, do you? For a show?
Maybe
My
not.
Christmas wish.
No. Well, if you do show up, if you guys do show up on Skype, I won't be here. So. You get something done, by all means, go ahead. I will be elsewhere with my family. Because, again, we do this as a hobby. So, for 2 or 3 weeks around Christmas time, you can kiss our asses. 18th, probably, actually, the week of the 18th, probably be our last show, most likely. But, unless you guys got anything else pressing, let's get the hell out of here.
Nope, I'm good, thanks.
Take Glace there.
I'm good.
Okay, I was just going to make a joke, but you beat me to it. Okay, so if you'd like to get in touch with us, we have a bunch of ways you could do that. First off is Facebook. It's Wonderpod Online, all one word, Wonderpod Online. You just shoot us a friend request. Unless you're an obvious bot or spammer, we'll accept it. We have a website. It's wonderpodonline.com, wonderpodonline.com. There you'll find this show posted every week on Friday morning. And on top of that, we do a lot of videos. Patman's been playing a lot of the Rare Replay. I've made a video about my adventures in Arma 3, so stop by waterpotonline.com. When I post the podcast at the site, there's an embedded player, so you can listen to it on a browser if you want. We are on iTunes like everybody else. It's WonderPod. Just search WonderPod. If you don't like iTunes, we are at archive.org. Also search WonderPod, and that's also the good place to get our entire catalog. We have a Twitter account. It's at WonderPod Online. At Wonderpod Online, YouTube channels. I've got a YouTube channel. Glacinator's got a YouTube channel where we post some stuff. The 36 Wii YouTube channel. The Olivia Made This YouTube channel. The What Chris Does YouTube channel. If you'd like your YouTube channel added to the end of the show spiel, shoot me a message. What else? Yeah, that's enough. We have an email address. It's wonderpod@wonderpodonline.com. wonderpod@wonderpodonline.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter, @ORIGIM. Or you can follow John on Twitter,
@JohnKeho, JohnKehoe.
Until episode 268, fall may be here, but I'm out of here. See you, people.
Cheers. Buy the new Iron Maiden album tomorrow.
Oops, forgot about that.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, that's okay.
Bye.
That has to be the cheesiest closer I think I've ever done.